This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. Artificial intelligence is all around us. It sorts our emails. It matches us with potential partners on dating apps. But now AI is going beyond these more mundane tasks and learning more fun stuff, like how to impersonate the Beatles. That's Daddy's Car. It was composed with AI from the Sony CSL Research Lab. Now, this could revolutionize creativity. It could also challenge our conception of what makes us human. How does AI make art? Is it still art if a computer makes it? Or perhaps, is it better? Joining us from the BBC in London is Marcus de Sautoy, a professor of mathematics at Oxford. His new book is called The Creativity Code: Art and Innovation in the Age of AI. Professor, welcome back to 1A.
Great to be with you again.
We'd love to hear from you as well. If you discovered that your favorite work of art or song was created by AI, how would you feel about it? We'd also love to hear from you if you are an artist in any medium, if you've worked with AI or machine learning to further your art. What was that like and how do you reflect on that? Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A or email 1A@wamu.org. Before we dive in too deeply, Marcus, just give us a quick definition. When we say AI, artificial intelligence, what exactly are we talking about? Do we mean when I ask Siri what the weather's going to be today, or is it a little more than that?
Well, I think it includes that. Artificial intelligence is something that Alan Turing started us on a journey to try and discover, which is, can we write code for a computer that does things similar to our own brain? So I think that our own brain is basically neurons and synapses which are making logical decisions. So it is a sort of code inside our heads. So the challenge is, could we create code for a computer which matches our own intelligence? So that's why it's called artificial intelligence. But sometimes I rather like to translate AI as maybe augmented or additional intelligence. Can we get the computer to do different things from our own intelligence? But basically, we're trying to create code that can navigate the world around us, from simple things like find things on the internet through to the challenge of creating art.
And that Turing, Alan Turing, as you mentioned it, some of us know about what's called the Turing test, this idea that you might eventually be able to create a computer or a program whose output is indistinguishable from that of a human, which I think makes the whole idea of artificial intelligence art so much more intriguing and perhaps even scarier.
Yes, I think you've got a similar challenge, you see, for art. I mean, if you're shown some artworks and then told that some of them are created by AI, the challenge is, well, are you good enough to really see the human behind some of the art and realise some of it's artificial? And I think that's what's really interesting. In fact, there's a proposal of something which we call the Lovelace Challenge. Ada Lovelace was one of the first people to consider code for a machine which might do something more than just mathematical calculations. She was during the Victorian age. We celebrate her every year as the first coder, Ada Lovelace Day. But she already offered the challenge, well, maybe these machines could be programmed to do more than calculation. Perhaps they could make music. After all, music is just sort of a patterns, rather like numbers have patterns. Could you program a computer to create music? So the Lovelace challenge is, well, yeah, but could you tell the difference between something created by a human or a computer? And also, is the computer able to go beyond just the person who coded the machine? I mean, after all, isn't the person who's really creating the thing the person who writes the code? And that's the challenge. Can code become independent from the coder?
Yeah, tell us more about writing that code. How do you teach a machine to make art, to draw, to paint, to compose music? What does that involve?
Well, in the past, it was very much a sort of top-down coding. The coder really had to understand how the art was created in the first place that maybe you're trying to mimic or go beyond. And that's very difficult. Most of us really don't understand the creative process. It's a very sort of subconscious process. So it seemed to be an impossible thing to write down explicit instructions, if this, then do that. But code has really changed. And this is why I wrote this book at this particular time, because the last few years has seen a different sort of code emerging, which is code we call machine learning or deep learning. It's code written really from the bottom up. And the point is the code is allowed to change, mutate, learn, develop, become something different from the code originally written by the human. And that's by interacting with the kind of digital world around it, so that it learns what is art. It learns what we consider music. It learns what's the secret behind the Beatles, which maybe it'd be able to put into practice in its own composition. And I think it's that the fact that the code is sort of changing and mutating, becoming something different, that is starting to give us the possibility, first of all, that code can learn what we consider art and make more and new stuff, but also it can become something autonomous from the actual coder, original human who wrote the code that helps the AI to learn.
Give me your sense of how people in the computer science world view AI as art. I'm sure there are some who are totally excited about the potential of this. I can imagine that there might be a few who feel the way that maybe some Beatles fans would feel when you say that a computer could figure out the secret behind the Beatles. That feels a little reductive. Like, if you can reduce the Beatles to code, then they're basically part of the Matrix, as opposed to just being geniuses. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think I don't know whether it's a slip of the tongue there, but you said AI is art. I think that there is a really interesting growing art form, which is the art of the coder. The person writing the code is becoming a kind of new sort of artist. But I think your question is really about, you know, how are we feeling about AI actually sort of coming in on a territory that we regard as kind of new, uniquely human. You know, writing music is an expression of our inner emotional world. How can a computer do that? But on the other hand, one still has to recognize that a lot of art forms have pattern, structure, sort of algorithmic processes in them. If you take somebody like Bach's music has a lot of interesting algorithms which are used by Bach quite explicitly and knowingly, I think, to generate sort of interesting, complex music. So I think that's why I'm a mathematician. You know, why is a mathematician writing a book about art and creativity? What I'm trying to reveal is that I think over my time as a mathematician, I've spent a lot of time talking to creative artists and have found that their world is full of structures that I recognize as a mathematician. And the point is that this AI is being able to sort of uncover some of these hidden patterns that even the artist may not be aware of and exploit those. And that's really what's the power of this new AI to uncover patterns that maybe we as humans aren't understanding. It might helped us to expand our own creativity by revealing how it works.
We're speaking to Marcus de Sautoy. His new book is called The Creativity Code. He's a professor of mathematics at Oxford. Glad to hear from some of you about this as well. John commented on our Facebook page, "As a fifth generation artist, I find this idea of AI art compelling and very modern and with the times, but I feel that it lacks the humanity found within artwork that was created through human hands. Granted, the AI was made with human ingenuity, so in my eyes, I see the AI not so much as the artist and more so as a new artistic medium through which human creativity flows." William wrote on our Facebook page, "AI can also collaborate with a human artist. The AI can learn from human-produced examples, propose alternatives which the human artist can use, modify, or ignore. In this case, AI can augment human creativity by helping the human artist more rapidly explore a larger space of possibilities. I propose the design of such a system for filmmaking, where the director's lens system can learn and suggest shot compositions and edits to the filmmaker." Now, Marcus, PBS did a short documentary about art generated through AI and the challenges that are presented potentially by putting that art before an audience. Here is a clip from that documentary.
There are at least two challenges to overcome before we have our first AI Warhol. The first challenge really has to do with how audiences will or won't appreciate machine-made works as art. The human appreciation of art by human beings is built on a framework that values work, physical and intellectual, meaning and intention, even when it's murky or unsuccessful, and subjectivity, the perspectives and background of the artist. This framework applies not at all, or in a totally different way, to entirely machine-made work, which is the direct result of a very different kind of labor.
part of a PBS short documentary about art generated through AI. Marcus, what do you make of that?
Well, absolutely fascinating comments from all of your listeners. And I think the idea of collaboration here is really important. I really wanted to make this a sort of positive take on AI, because I think there are so many kind of dystopian views that AI is going to take over the world. And, you know, we're just going to be in zoos and the AI will come and visit us and say, well, we evolved from that. No, I think absolutely right. It's a tool at the moment. It isn't very much more than that, I think. I think it will become something more autonomous, but we should regard this as a tool to expand our own creativity. And I think that idea of just expanding the world of possibilities, I think one of the most interesting examples I told in the book and saw in the book was something called the Jazz Continuator. This is an AI that learnt how a jazz musician was playing his riffs and then would respond in a kind of call and response. People listening didn't realise that this was a computer, thought it was a human actually improvising. But it was the response of the jazz musician who said, look, everything that machine is playing is my world. I recognize all the kind of themes that he's using. It's using, because I'm already anthropomorphizing the AI. but it's doing things I'd never thought about doing myself. And it's kind of years ahead of me. And I think that's the really exciting role that AI can play. I think as humans, we start behaving too much like machines. We start repeating patterns of behavior over and over again. And I think what the AI might do is to help us actually to become more creative as humans again.
Well, then where's the threshold for AI? I mean, if you put me in a room with a jazz musician and I was improvising with them, I'm not the best jazz singer, but I did take a few classes in college, and whatever it is that I do when I'm scatting with the band ain't gonna be what the computer's gonna do. So it's going to be different no matter what. Where's the bar, at least in terms of those who are working in AI as art right now, where's the bar for where we can legitimately say, oh, that computer made art, as opposed to that computer made something different?
Well, I think that's really interesting because, of course, any human is going to create something different to another human. So I don't think that's the threshold. And also, you have to recognize that the AI, because it's using this learning process, it's taking our art. So it's learning what we regard as art, music, literature, poetry, and extending that. Now, one criticism I think that can be made is that it isn't doing anything different. It's really just pastiche. And I think that that's a lot of the examples you see AI creating another Rembrandt. We've got great Rembrandts. Why do you need another Rembrandt? What I would like to see is AI really pushing us into new realms that we still are emotionally responding to as humans. And because it's learning on our human art, which we respond to emotionally, it's not surprising that the new art it produces might also cause us to have an emotional reaction. But I think the really scary thing for people is, look, if you're not told that's by AI and you have an emotional response, say, to a piece of music, and then you get told it's oh, well, that was done by a computer, I think most people kind of feel cheated. They feel like that's kind of not right. However, you know, if I tell you a joke which is created by and you laugh, and then I say it's created by AI, does that invalidate your laughter? I don't think it does. But I think this is the point. The AI is tapping into our human art world to be able to create the things it is. So it isn't completely inhuman because it's learnt from our human art.
Well, and I think I hear you on that. I'm not sure I fully would buy if someone said, oh, I feel cheated. I'm not sure I fully buy that. I mean, coding is work, and there is an art to creating technology. You know, the team at IBM who developed Watson, they put their hearts into that for an extremely long time. That's not something that you just kind of crank out of, you know, of some assembly line. We got a voicemail from a listener named Matt, who's in Wichita, about AI art. Here's what Matt left in our inbox.
I think part of what's missing in this conversation is the notion of mathematics as an art. And since AI is driven by mathematics, it seems to me that the art still belongs to the artist, and that there's something beyond just the art itself that was presented to the general public. There's also an art that's hidden beneath the surface inside of the AI itself.
Matt, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us. And Marcus, as a professor of math, I would love your reaction to that.
Well, I think that's absolutely why I embarked on this journey, because I regard mathematics as a highly creative subject. And I think a lot of people, thought Well, surely a mathematician must have been put out of a job already by computers and artificial intelligence because it's so logical. But I think there's a huge amount of creativity in doing mathematics. And that's why when I started to see AI being quite successful in being sort of creative in other realms, music, visual arts, I was quite interested in the challenge of whether AI could be creative mathematically. And I think he's absolutely right in making that comment that much of art has kind of structure and pattern behind it and has kind of a mathematics there, which is sort of creative, has aesthetics, has beauty. So the challenge is, you know, can AI learn to do these things which we're responding to emotionally?
Nicholas tweeted, is AI creating wholly original works or just replicating the style of a person or group? Is it doing it because it wants to or because it was programmed to?
Oh, I think that's such a good question, because I think this idea of intentionality, who had the intention to do this? Still, that is at its source a human who's basically starting the process of learning. But I think that what we're seeing, which is exciting, is that, yes, there is genuinely new stuff. It isn't just pastiche. And I think one of the interesting examples I saw when I wrote the book was something called a creative adversarial network, where you get two algorithms almost competing against each other to push art out of the what we recognize now, particular styles, and to try and create a new style. So you've got one algorithm doing the creating, and then you've got another algorithm doing the discriminating. It's sort of saying, no, that's still cubist art, or that's still pointillist art, or else it's saying, wow, you've gone too far. That's not what any of us would regard as art. And it's the competition between these two, which is actually producing art, which when showed at Basel Art Fair, people coming to visit the art who weren't told it was by AI, we're responding to it more than the art created by humans. So I think it's interesting, because I think creativity in an artist is actually captured by this idea of two networks in the brain, one being incredibly creative, explosive, and the other one saying, no, that's not good enough, judging, discriminating, and choosing which things deserve to go forward. So I like this kind of idea of this creative adversarial network, because I think it captures actually how creativity works for me as well as a human.
More in just a moment with Marcus de Sotoy of Oxford, the author of The Creativity Code. Andy wrote on our Facebook page, art is something we take part in to train our eyes to see and our hearts to feel. If we continue to outsource the production of art rather than each of us experiencing the joy and struggle of making art, we have lost a large chunk of our humanity. Interesting comment, Andy. We'll pick up on that in a moment. Stay close. Back now to our conversation with Professor Marcus de Sotoy of Oxford. His new book is called The Creativity Code. Andy wrote on our Facebook page, art is something we take part in to train our eyes to see and our hearts to feel. If we continue to outsource the production of art rather than each of us experiencing the joy and struggle of making art, we have lost a large chunk of our humanity. I'd love you to respond to that, but I want to add one bit to that. There's an author named Seth Godin, who writes about creativity and entrepreneurship, writes and speaks on it. He wrote a book called The Icarus Deception about treating your work as a form of art. Let me read you something that Seth wrote. He's a frequent blogger, and this is how he defines art. It's not the medium or the oil or the price or whether it hangs on a wall or you eat it. What matters, what makes it art, is that the person who made it overcame the resistance, ignored the voice of doubt, and made something worth making, something risky, something human. Art is not in the eye of the beholder. It's in the soul of the artist. What do you think?
I think it's in both, and I think it's about a conversation, because I think art is really trying to get to the heart of one of the great problems of science, which is something called the hard problem of consciousness. We don't really know what's going on inside the mind of the other. If you have somebody in front of you, you assume that their internal world is quite like your own, but you can never really experience that. And I think that the art that we produce is somehow an expression of how we see the world, taking that risk to show others what you are experiencing about the world around you. But I think when you say art is in the eye of the beholder, partly that's then there is another part of that conversation, which is the person is actually getting access to your world through the creation of your art. And that is what I think is really interesting when we come to AI art, because actually the AI that we're producing is becoming so complex and so dense in the code that we don't really understand how and why it's making the decisions it is. And going forward, it's making decisions about, as you say in your opening, the partners we might have or might turn us down for a job application, convictions in the law courts. If we don't understand how it's making its decisions, then we're giving up control. So I think some of the most interesting art is not interesting as compared to human art, but it's giving us insight into maybe some biases which are beginning to sort of get embedded in the code that we don't realize are there. So I think that there is a role for AI art in helping us in some strange way to get in the mind, get inside the code itself. So I think that, you know, that passage you read out really is very relevant to why AI art may play a very significant role going forward.
Marion wrote on our Facebook page, "I'm an art historian and a member of the Art and AI Lab at Rutgers. It's important to make clear that AI art is not human-made art and doesn't aspire to be that. Creativity as a process is different for a human versus a machine. What to ask is if the art is interesting to look at. Is it creative art? To know why it looks like a portrait or is abstract or looks like Renaissance art, consider the data that the machine can learn from. Human-made art. As the machine learns, who knows what new creative methods and results may occur, but it is not about competition with human-made art, it's merely learning." I would fully agree with that, except last year there was a painting called Portrait of Edmond de Bellamy that was exhibited at an art show, and the painting sold for more than $400,000, and what people thought was a 19th century piece of portrait art was actually drawn by a computer. Can we actually say that AI art ain't competing with humans?
Well, I think one should point out that nobody was trying to pretend that was done by a human. And I think the value of that piece of art was precisely because it was created by AI.
Exactly.
In fact, in the corner, you know, it was signed not by a human, but by a mathematical formula, rather cutely. and, you know, I think most art critics, humans looking at that piece of art will say, well, it's not really very good art. And I think the value of it was coming from making a statement about, well, you know, what is art going forward when you have an AI that can learn about the way painting works, learn about particular periods of history and produce something different. So I think that was rather like Duchamp putting, you know, a urinal in an art gallery. That first urinal had extraordinary value for the comment it was making about what is art. I think going forward, you know, the value of art, because it's created by AI, will dramatically drop. That first piece was exciting because it was better than I think people thought it would be, but still sort of, you know, I don't think it's challenging the artists that are currently being sold at Christie's or Sotheby's.
By the way, speaking of the way that we regard art, Jerry Saltz, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning art critic, had some pretty harsh criticism for an AI-generated painting called Untitled 1969. Here is what he told Vice about AI versus human art.
Initial thoughts, incredibly dull, generic, boring. If the ultimate test is, could this have been made by a human? The answer is, yes, it has been 1,000 to the 1,000th power in times.
That's Pulitzer Prize-winning art critic Jerry Saltz speaking to Vice about the AI-generated painting Untitled 1969. Speaking of art, Marcus, what kinds of art are we talking about? I mean, I hear a fair amount about AI making paintings, making music, classical music, pop music, maybe doing some writing. I haven't heard about, but maybe you have, AI doing hip-hop or AI doing animation or video games or choreography or sketch comedy. I wonder what the lens is that coders, that computer programmers are using to define the art that they feel is worth writing code around.
All of those things have been tried, actually. It's really interesting. I mean, I think if there's something creative, somebody's trying to replicate it in code. I mean, I went along to an Algo rave. So the music was being produced by an algorithm.
Sorry, Marcus, I thought I heard you say you went to an Algo rave.
I went to an Algo rave.
I heard
exactly.
You right.
So a rave, so it was techno music, but it was created by an AI, and the AI was actually reading the kind of temperature, emotional temperature of the crowd, and really bouncing off that, understanding, you know, when to produce a drop in the music in order to really send the crowd wild. So so I think there's really interesting examples, not just in kind of written visual and music, which AI is even trying cooking. So, you know, that's a place where you can be very creative. The idea of fusion cooking, although as far as I could read, it's not been terribly successful to date.
Right. Although, oddly enough, I don't feel as nervous. Maybe this is just me. I don't feel as nervous about AI cooking, because as long as there's like a recipe and, you know, it knows how to test the quality of the ingredients, maybe that feels a little safer. I don't know. But the Algo rave, am I saying that right?
An Algo rave.
What was that like being there? I mean, I've been to, you know, great nights out dancing, and the cool thing was that I wasn't in control at all. Like, I was totally out of my body because the DJ just basically had me on a leash, and everything the DJ played, I could not get off the dance floor. And 3 hours later, I was sweaty and tired and euphoric because he took me someplace I couldn't have gone. But if the computer is reading me, then I don't know, it feels like the tail wagging the dog.
Well, what's really striking is that, you know, people think that AI surely can't read our emotional world, but actually it turns out AI is much better at reading our emotions than we are as humans. There's some interesting cases of trying to get people to recognize whether somebody is doing a genuine smile or a false smile. And the AI is being able to pick up qualities in the human face, which indicate that this is a false smile, not a real smile. And they're much more successful at this than humans are. So this is what's being used in a kind of rave setting, is, you know, picking up on the emotional sort of charge of the room and just being able to know when to lift the music to a peak and then to let the music drop such that everyone sort of has this kind of rush of emotions. So I think people are kind of a surprise when they're told that AI is able to kind of understand our own emotional world. And I think that's really important going forward, because in some sense, we want, as AI becomes sort of more and more powerful, there is this fear of a dystopia of AI just taking off on its own. We sort of want, as many of your listeners have pointed out, AI as a collaborator. AI is a tool for us, AI to help us. And so if you can get AI to understand our own emotional world, maybe it will behave more humanely because of that understanding.
Let me get to another voicemail from a listener. Here is what Virginia left in our inbox.
This is Virginia in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You should not talk about art and artificial intelligence without referring to my graduate thesis advisor, Harold Cohen. In the mid-1970s, he was a pioneer in applying artificial intelligence to the creation of art. He developed a drawing machine that didn't copy other drawings, but that created its own meaningful drawings based on spatial instructions. Harold died in 2016, but his AI alter ego, the machine, Aaron, lives on. Much of what I learned about drawing, perception, and how human beings interpret lines on paper came through Aaron.
Virginia, thanks for sharing your story with us. Marcus?
That's one of the stories I tell in the book, so she'll be very pleased to read the story of Aaron. Absolutely. And that's really an interesting example, because this is an example of this kind of top-down coding that I talked about right at the beginning. What Cohen understood was rules of engagement for the machine on the canvas, and it had basically if-then commands. If there's a pencil going across the page, then do this this particular time. What was very interesting when I looked into that story is that Cohen often talked about his creation making decisions And I was interested, well, what does that mean? Because that sounds like some sort of free will inside the computer. Where is that free will coming from? Where is the autonomy for the code coming from? And I was a little bit disappointed that that decision-making process was actually given up to a random number generator. So it was just pure chance, which is giving the illusion that this machine has got some autonomy when I don't think that really is a decision process if it's just random.
Let me get to a few more comments as we wind down. You mentioned this idea of AI being pastiche, potentially. Lindsay commented on our Facebook page, an artist's application of technique is not arbitrary, but a part of their observation of the world, of the expression of the meaning or lack of meaning they perceive. AI art, and art is in quotes, is basically a different manifestation of paint-by-number kits. Matt wrote on our website, the1a.org, I wouldn't call it art. Having a relatable or at least interesting person behind the art is a big part of the experience. Joel tweeted a question. Joel asks, even in AI, there's a threat of incorporating bias in the code. Is there a charge in the development community to minimize this bias infusion in art and other AI applications?
I did a really interesting event last year with Wired with a woman who works at the MIT Media Lab, and she's a roboticist. And she found some robots that just wouldn't recognize that she was in front of the robots. Why? Because she's black. When she put a white mask on, suddenly the robots responded. And when she looked underneath the bonnet to see what the code was doing, it had learnt on just pictures of white male faces and had got this bias incorporated into the code. So this is why I think it's really important going forward that we understand how the code is learning. And this is why I think that the art plays a role in revealing these biases. So, in some ways, we're working towards a mind beginning to appear. I mean, maybe not in a kind of philosophical sense, but certainly something which we don't understand quite how it's thinking. And any tool that we can have to unravel these kind of biases or the way it's making decisions, I think is going to be very powerful going forward.
One last comment. Cameron tweeted, most music today feels like it's been created by AI. They blend sounds and patterns of previous hits to the point that most music has lost its soul. Ouch. Hope you tune in tomorrow to meet Ile, and we'll see what you think after that. Before we let you go, Marcus, suppose there's an artist who's listening who thinks, this sounds cool. I want to start using some kind of AI and some kind of art. Where do you begin?
Well, there's a lot of code put on this thing called GitHub, which is kind of freely available to people. And there are a lot of great departments across the world, one in Rutgers that was mentioned, in London, there are great departments. And so I think there's just wonderful material online to start just playing. This is like the camera, I think. It's a new sort of tool that we can use to push us in a new direction. We shouldn't be frightened of it.
And I'm sorry, that's GitHub, G-I-T-H-U-B?
Yes, that's right.
And how soon do you think that we'll start to see AI art more in the mainstream? Before I let you go,
I think that we're already, music is an interesting place. The music is, that Beatles is pretty trash. But, often all you need is good enough because, if you need music for a computer game, it doesn't need to be Beethoven or the Beatles. It just needs to be good enough. And, to be able to not have to pay royalties to a band is probably going to be interesting sort of commercially going forward.
I know some gamers who are going to be furious that you said the music just has to be good enough. You're going to get us in trouble.
Well, it also has to be able to respond to the gamer, so
right.
it needs a good algorithm to send the music in a new direction if you've chosen a different way to play the game.
Marcus DeSotoy is a professor of mathematics at Oxford. His new book is called The Creativity Code, Art and Innovation in the Age of AI. Professor, thanks for talking to us.
Great to be on again. Thanks.
Before we go, a quick word about our new educational partnership. A lot of teachers have told us that you use content from 1A to start conversations with your students. If you'd like to use our content in the classroom, we partner with a company called ListenWise to provide free materials. You can go to listenwise.com and search 1A. That's the number one, the letter A. Today's conversation was produced by Haley Blassingame. To learn more about her and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org/staff. I'm Joshua Johnson. In the flesh. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.